Yes, a very good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, October 5. Big Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. And you probably just heard that weather forecast. It is not good. Not good to say the least, particularly on the weekend. Today, already around Sydney at least, the rain is coming. Up to 20 mils forecast, but up to 30 mils Saturday and 45 mils on Sunday. Loz, morning to you, mate. It's just been absolutely relentless.
It has, Mido. You know what? I'm worried about Saturday's races. I'm really concerned about the track. We're about to get all this type of rain over the next couple of days, and there's a big deluge coming on Saturday as well. So I don't know whether the track will be able to hold it all or whether it'll hold up during the day, but fingers crossed we'll be able to have the races there on Saturday. But it's not good. It's a stay inside the next couple of days and look after yourself, and in particular in those flood zones. Hopefully people have as well prepared as they possibly can be, and we don't get that type of rain. But if we do, hopefully people will be well prepared as they possibly can be.
You wonder if the ATC and Racing New South Wales might take a preemptive strike. They've done it before, and I don't know if they, like you mentioned yesterday, maybe they do take the punt and go, well, let's do Rose Hill this week, give the track a break for Everest Day, because then they've got another two meetings at Randwick anyway before they head back to Rose Hill after that.
Well, that's the key, isn't it? You want the track to be good for Everest Day, and hopefully the weather will be better next week. But it's a good day on Sunday. I don't know whether they postpone it till...
No, Sunday's
Sunday?
Bad.
Oh, Sunday's bad. Wasn't
Sunday's
it?
Bad.
Oh, Sunday's bad.
Monday's when we get the
Monday's
relief.
When we start to get the relief. Yeah. Oh, right, geez. Yeah, I don't know. I think we've just got to sit back and wait and see. I don't know whether you can change it at the last moment or whether you just postpone it. But whatever happens, I'm sure they'll make the right decision.
Hopefully so. By the way, no pup today. He wasn't feeling great yesterday. And he's succumbed, Loz. He's succumbed. So hopefully he'll be...
Hopefully he'll be back tomorrow.
Look after himself. Back tomorrow.
A little bit dusty yesterday, but hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. I'll tell you what, game of cricket on tonight. Australia taking on the West Indies in a T20 warm-up. They're not at full strength, West Indies. They had to leave a bloke at home. Well, he failed to jump on the plane.
Missed the plane, got sacked from the squad.
Jeez.
Do you reckon they were calling his name over the PA? Hetmeyer.
Hetmeyer. Where are you, sir?
Have you had that done before?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had it done only recently.
Not a good feeling, is it?
I had it done recently. When we were coming back from Kosciuszko.
Oh, down in...
From the Kosciuszko, yes.
Well, you flew back from Canberra?
Flew back from Canberra. Yeah.
And you've had L. Daly come over the PA at Canberra Airport.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. My daughter was going to Melbourne with a boyfriend, and she was in Canberra Airport. So when I drove back to Canberra, she turned up, and I went and had a cup of tea with her in the terminal. And then we got talking, and then I heard my name, and I had to bolt to the gate. So... As you do at airports, you can get carried away talking and you forget about your flight.
Not a good feeling,
Not
is
a
it?
Good feeling, no.
No. What about one of your old teammates there at the Raiders, Loz? The City Morning Herald reported yesterday that the pitch invader during the grand final on Sunday night, who was arrested by police, was former Raider Mark McClendon. He was protesting against all environmental matters. He was wearing his footy boots as well, just to get, you know, some extra traction there. He managed to rip off one of the goalpost pads, had a bike lock around his neck as well. So we've seen a few protests, particularly in soccer, football, of that ilk, when some people like to, you know, lock themselves against the post, etc. So he's getting given a $5,000 fine and banned from going to games. But Mark McClendon, there you go. There's a blast from the past, Loz.
Oh, certainly was. Look. I'm all for people protesting, but please, really, at sporting events, and, you know, people that do that and stop traffic in peak hour and things like that, it's ridiculous. Surely they can make their protest a lot better by doing it in a march that's been organised rather than running onto a field during a grand final. They were lucky that the play was down the other end and he didn't stop the game. you know, I know everyone's got their different thoughts on climate change, but there's better ways to go about protesting than running onto the field and making a goose of yourself.
Yeah, he says, and I love his the contradiction in his quotes in this article in the Herald, says that he really didn't want to take the moment away from the players on the field and, you know, how big an occasion it was for them, but, you know, just couldn't ignore the cause that he's trying to...
But I think he gets a lot more people offside when they do stunts
exactly
like this.
That's exactly right.
That's what I feel like. As I said, I think people have got their right to protest. People have got their own opinions on climate change, and not everyone agrees on it. But surely there's better ways to make a statement than to run out onto the field on grand final day and try and lock yourself onto a goalpost.
Yeah. Anyway, thankfully, he didn't completely stop the game. Unfortunately, like the idiot that you had to deal with that time during Origin.
2013, you just reminded me.
Unbelievable.
Of that. Yeah. That was right at the end of the game, too.
Right at the end of the game with the game up for grabs. Yeah. The series
up for grabs.
I mean, I can only imagine what was going through your head in the coach's box at that time.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't have wanted a camera inside there.
No.
But I just don't get the protesters doing it on that stage. If it's well organised and you want to protest, go for your life. But don't disrupt sporting events. Don't disrupt people's everyday life when they're driving to work with traffic stoppages and holding the cities to ransom. I just don't understand. I think it does more harm than good.
You would have played with him, the last couple of years of your career, I think, there at the Raiders, Mark
McClinton. I think I played with him, when he first came into grade, that was, probably 98.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. His first year in first grade, if there was an Australian team picked at the end of that year, probably a tour, I think he would have went away.
He was flashy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a touch footy background.
Hmm.
So he had speed, he had good skill. Quite tough for a little bloke. He wasn't real big.
Hmm.
But I see he's been living up there in Mullumbimby. He's grown the hair long. He had a good career. And his first couple of years with the Raiders were quite strong.
Hmm. I want to give a really good shout out this morning to Ned Brockman. I've been following his running on Instagram. So Ned Brockman decided to run from one side of Australia to the other, from the West Coast to the East Coast, trying to do it within 50 days. So it's around 100 Ks a day. And he's closing in after starting in the West on the New South Wales border, Loz. And you can donate, by the way, he's raising money for homelessness. And he's putting up daily updates. So he's just completed yesterday, day 34. Day 34, he ran 100.15 kilometres as he gets towards that New South Wales border. I've read his post. Now, how about his post yesterday? Was it yesterday? It might have been the day before, but just some of the pain
I can't believe
that this bloke is going through.
I can't believe it. A lot of people would struggle to run 100K in 10 days, let alone one day. And it's such a great cause, you know, for homelessness and for 50 days... To run for, that's a lot of kilometres.
Yeah, so this
this
is yesterday. I was reading this earlier. I'll read this. This is from his Instagram post. At the 20-kilometre mark today, I broke down so bad. I cried and cried and cried. I was so scared, felt incredibly vulnerable, had all my team around, but I was honestly just so in my head and was dead set petrified. My body was screaming at me. I really didn't think it was possible to keep going. Then, you know, his mate smacked him, told him to suck it up, only 2 weeks until he pulls off the unthinkable, etc. But the ailments he's dealing with his body, as he runs upwards of 100 kilometres a day for 50 days.
Well, you talk about pushing yourself through the pain barrier. He's doing that. He's been tested physically. He's been tested mentally. He's got good support around him, but you can only imagine what he's going through. In his darkest times, when he feels like pulling out and when he feels like giving up, he just continues to keep running. I don't know how he does it, because you can only imagine the stress on his feet, his knees, his whole body would be aching. He'd be in so much pain, yet the cause is that strong. He wants to continue to keep pushing himself, challenging himself. So if people can donate, please do. But that's an unbelievable effort.
Yeah, we will, when it's all said and done, we will get him on the show for sure. He's obviously got plenty of media following him through this journey as well. But his website, for those who want to donate, so he's raising money for homelessness, nedsrecordrun.com. Ned, that's double D on the Ned. nedsrecordrun.com. He says he's pretty sure he's fractured a metatarsal. Now, I've broken that bone in your foot. You can't put any pressure on your foot, so I don't know how he's doing that.
Well, not for 100K.
No.
And not consistently every day. He'd be hallucinating with it when he's running. He'd be battling all types of ailments. He'd be just be challenged like no one else has been challenged, and he's just pushing himself. He's got to be one mentally strong dude.
Next level. Incredible. The Panthers' fallout continues from their premiership success, and back page of the Daily Telegraph, Martin's place. Panthers warned not to risk letting premiership hero go to market. There's a stack of players, many high-profile players, set to come off contract at the end of next year so they can talk to clubs from November 1, other clubs, and one of those is Liam Martin, although the Sydney Morning Herald's reporting that Martin and the club are closing in on a three-year extension, despite interest from Parramatta, reportedly. Trent Barrett is Martin's cousin. Both Tamora boys, aren't they, Loz? Down sort of your way, down there in the southern area of New South Wales. But again, we were talking about it yesterday. I mean, potentially he was in a battle with Sean Lane for that kangaroo spot, and he well and truly rubber-stamped his place with his performance on Sunday night.
Yeah, I thought he was great. And Alan Ganey has said that, you know, they don't want him to go to open market because they're a chance of losing him if he does. And we've said it for a while now, when you're in a successful club, you tend to take unders to stay. But what happens is there's a lot of other clubs that look for certain individuals, and if they're looking for back rowers, Liam Barton is one of the highest profile back rowers on the open market. So if he comes on the open market, then you've got a club there sitting with a lot of money to attract him to your organisation. So that's what Penrith are up against. And then it's a matter of whether Martin decides to take less to stay in a successful organisation, or he wants to take the money and go to another club and try and help turn them into a premiership winning force. But, you know, this is the challenge that Penrith will face. It's the challenge that the Roosters have faced, the Storm have faced, all the good sides recently. They tend to lose players after a grand final. So Penrith are going through it at the moment. They lost a couple last year, they lost a couple. They'll lose a couple this year again with Kikau and Coruscant moving on. And this will be a regular theme for them if they continue to have the success we all anticipate they'll have.
And for these players, it is that acceptance, isn't it, Loz, that if you want to stay in this environment, you're going to have to accept that we're all going to have to take a little bit less to keep this together. I remember Manly had sort of a gentleman's agreement with each other, didn't they? That team of about 12 years ago after they won their premiership in 2011.
Yep.
And they had, you know, the Stewarts, Watmo, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. And they all sort of had a bit of a gentleman's agreement with each other. Let's keep this together and take a bit less.
Yeah, they did. But I think with the increase of the salary cap too, I think that makes it harder because the players will then demand a bit more money. And then it's always difficult. It's a difficult job managing a salary cap roster, and you've got to remember that you've got to get it right, because if you play overs and you have far too many players on high money or big deals, you could wreck your setup there for a period to come. We've seen a lot of teams get their salary cap out of whack, and it can take a number of years then to claw your way back. So you've got to be really strategic in the way you go about signing players. You've got certain values you place on them. You've got to understand what you've got coming through as well, and in what year you expect and anticipate those players to be playing first grade. So it's a bit like a jigsaw puzzle. You've got to make it all fit. But all those Penrith players, once you start winning competitions, as an individual, you're worth a lot more.
Yeah, Crichton, To'o, Spencer Lenu's another one I think that Penrith are going to have to try and keep.
Geez, he was good too, Spencer Lenu.
Superb. I think Crichton's going to be the difficult one for them, Loz, because he wants to play fullback.
Well, as a centre, what do you pay a centre? What type of money are you going to... And when you're paying, you know, $1 million to Cleary, Isaiah Yeo's money will go up, Liam Martin's money will go up, all the players will go up, and then you've got a guy like Stephen Crichton that's playing as a centre. He's not going to play fullback. Dylan Edwards' money will go up. You can't pay a centre 800. Well, Penrith certainly won't be able to pay him 800. Whereas on the open market, a club will pay him 800 to go and play fullback.
Mm.
That'll be the difficulty with Stephen Crichton trying to re-sign with Penrith.
Also back page of the Sydney Morning Herald, better than Brandy. Cleary hailed as Penrith's greatest ever halfback. And we had a chat about this yesterday as the debate rages about where this Penrith side sits, where Nathan Cleary sits in the club's pecking order. And even in this article with the Herald, the likes of Greg Alexander and Craig Gower, previous premiership halfbacks there at the club, and captains as well, have come out and said that, well, basically Nathan Cleary is the best halfback the club's ever had. Alexander goes on to say that he will soon be Penrith's greatest ever player, but also goes on to say how he was, what you were saying yesterday, Loz, a much different player. Brandy says, I was a different player.
Definitely. When you look at highlights of Greg Alexander, he would do things that Nathan Cleary couldn't do. And Nathan is a completely different player to Greg Alexander. And anyone that saw Brandy play, he was one of the most naturally gifted footballers you have ever seen. He had blistering speed. He could chip and chase. He could do things that just you sat back and just watched and just went, wow, what a player he is. Nathan Cleary is more that control, starting to get his running game in order. Fantastic guy in a tight situation because he never loses his head. He's always very calm and always making right decisions. But the big one for Cleary now would just be to go on and add to what he's already achieved. You know, win more premierships, play more first grade, play more Origins and for Australia, and then solidify his legacy because, you know, he's on the verge of becoming their greatest ever player with what he's already done so early in his career.
Back page of the Australian and, you know, obviously NRL clubs, quite a few. The Tigers come to mind, get bagged for their administration, etc. But I don't think a club's gone through more turmoil this year in Australian sport, or particularly in recent times, than the Essendon Football Club and the AFL, Loz. So their new chief executive has lasted one day in the job after, well, the Herald Sun this week published a sermon. So he was part of, or has been part of a church there in Melbourne, in Victoria. And they've found some sermon that he delivered in this church. His name's Andrew Thorburn, the new chief executive of Essendon. A sermon where he delivers controversial views on abortion and homosexuality as well. So the Essendon board, and this came after, of course, that they got rid of the previous chairman and CEO, and they belly flopped in their pursuit of Alistair Clarkson, who eventually went to North Melbourne. Now, he's obviously been or stood himself down as well, pending that investigation over some of the incidents that went on with Indigenous players when he was there at Hawthorn. But anyway, back to Essendon. So the Herald Sun's published this sermon this week, and within a day, new chief executive gone.
Unbelievable story, Middo. And this Andrew Thorman, he's the chairman of this City on a Hill church, and their stance is anti-gay and anti-abortion, and he refused to step down as chairman of this church. And once he refused to step down, obviously this position with the Essendon Football Club became untenable. But you've got to ask yourself the question, why didn't they do it before all this stuff came out?
They said they didn't know. They had no idea. The Essendon, David Barham, the chairman, said that they only became aware of these views and comments when they were published in the Herald Sun this week.
You talk about due diligence.
And you've got to ask everything now, don't you?
A thorough process. And that's what I heard them say when they signed him.
Yeah, incredible.
A rigorous process, thorough.
Yeah, it's been
every other buzzword you want to come up with.
Disarray at that club. It is interesting, though, isn't it? Any sort of public...
So this is going back how far?
2013. Not.
But he's still involved in the church today. We must stress that. And because he won't stand down from his role with the church, they are now saying he's just untenable.
Yes.
So his views were made back in 2013.
Yeah.
But he'd still have those views today, personally, I would assume, if he's still involved with the church.
Well, he just says, I'm choosing my faith over the job.
Yes.
But, you know, goes on to say in a statement that he, you know, loves and respects everyone, etc. But essentially he's chosen his church over the job, yes.
Oh, well, I mean, if that's what he's done, he's made that right decision. I think it's a great decision from Essendon. The fact that they've decided to part ways with him. I mean, this would have split the club. That's the thing. It would have split the club. Mm. So they're trying to heal from 2013 when the Asada scandal happened. Yep. Was that 2013?
Oh, yeah, 12-13.
I still don't think they've recovered from that.
Mm.
They've had a lot of drama recently, and if you throw this guy in as CEO of the club, I don't think you heal at all.
Well, you're just getting more negative attention, aren't you?
Bigger division.
Yeah.
Bigger division in the club.
Loz and I have just come to the stark realisation that neither of us won the 50 million Oz Lotto last night, Loz. So the show will continue this morning.
Well, I'll tell you what, I want to take my hat off to you. Because I said to you in the break, if you'd won the 50 million, would you continue to work? And you said, yes. And I said, I'm unsure.
You mean this morning? So you just found out.
So if I just found out I won,
you would have just heaved ho right now. See you later.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, I wouldn't leave you in the lurch. By the way, if you're just tuning in, no pup. Pup's crook. So we'll give him pup the morning off.
But it'd be a loose show, wouldn't it?
Oh. Would you just start spraying everyone?
Oh, there'd be a few you'd spray, wouldn't there? Yeah. Have to be.
By the way, where's the narc? He's disappeared. Speaking of sprays.
I don't know where the narc is, no. I don't know. Is he on the...
Will he be on Mad Monday after Parramatta got
He'd be hiding. He'd be hiding after Parramatta got beaten. But he lost to a good side, a very, very good side.
Got a feeling that Dick Fane's tips won again. I think he's 2 from 2. We had a message about it yesterday, so I can't remember what he tipped for us last week. Yeah, just trying to make contact with Dick. We'll get him shortly over there in the States. Someone's just texted him, Pup won the 50 million. Oh, there you go. That makes sense. Pup's taking the day off.
Oh, right. Yeah, taking the day off.
At least someone who needed it got it.
Well, at least we would have come in and then did the show.
Yeah, because you want to tell people.
Yeah, you want to tell people.
By the way.
Yeah, by the way, I'm out. I'm gone. Pups is sick. He was a bit crook yesterday. Hopefully, he'll be okay for tomorrow, but we'll see.
Text line 0419 767 272 as the debate rages over the Penrith triumph and some of their individuals, particularly Nathan Cleary. This text, morning boys, just sidetracking from the Cleary-Brandy discussion. Would Teddy, James Tedesco, be the only current player who has done enough to be considered in immortal discussions in the future? Cheers, Smitty, sending that one through.
Well, I think if you're going to talk immortals, there'd be no one else. There'd be no one else currently. It'd be only him. But when you're talking immortals, you could name 40, 50, but you're trying to keep it to the best of the best, which you can't be handing them out. But in terms of if you're just in the discussion, I think Teddy'd be the only one at this stage. Mm.
Yeah, I tend to
because
agree
we tend
the
to sort of now thinking. Just sort of throw all names in the basket. And, let's put them as an immortal. Let's put them in an immortal. See, I still think there's some players that have missed out that should be seriously considered.
such as?
Oh, Brett Kenny is one.
Yeah, well, we got a text about him yesterday.
You know, mine, Bradley Clyde was the best. Clyde was a gun. You know, but that's just my opinion. You know, so there's a lot of players that played in the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s that were as good as any player running around now and as good as some of those guys that have become immortals. But it's up to, you know, individuals and it's up to other people to have that assessment of them. But when you're talking the immortals, it's just the best of the best. And you've got a crop of those guys that came through with the Thurstons, Lockyers, Slaters, Smiths, like all those guys.
Yeah, where do you draw the line?
Yeah, I mean, all those guys, they'd be in any conversation as the best players the game's ever seen. Mm. So how many do you want in it? That's the thing. How many do you want in it? But it's always a good debate. It's always a good debate. But, yeah, Teddy's, for mine, the best player in the game at the moment.
Mm. The Australian captain, of course, as well, confirmed yesterday. Dick, hello. How are you?
Hi, boys. How are we doing?
Yeah, really well, thank you. And we're 4 weeks into the NFL season. And yesterday, San Francisco beat the Rams, the Super Bowl champs, 24-9. That means the division of the NFC West, where your Seahawks are, all the teams are 2-2. What do you take out of that division so far?
Well, out of that division, I think there are two playoff teams in that division. I think they're the two teams you saw last night. I don't think the Rams are as bad as they showed last night. I don't think the Niners are probably quite as good as they showed last night. It was a one-possession game late into the game until that pick six. The Rams do have issues on the offensive line, though. There's no question about that. And they have a really meager running game. And they need to get their wide receiver core healthy. They need to get Van Jefferson back to give Cooper Kupp a little help because Allen Robinson has been a disaster opposite Cooper Kupp, and they spent a lot of money bringing in Allen Robinson to be the second wide receiver there. So there are issues with the defending Super Bowl champs. I do not believe they're going to win the Super Bowl again this year. I do not believe they will likely even go to the Super Bowl this year. But I do think they're still a 10-ish win team, and that'll be enough to get them into the playoffs. They'll probably end up, even though they never beat the 49ers, I would probably anticipate them getting their first win against Kyle Shanahan if they get healthy when they get back to Los Angeles and play them over there with a little revenge game. But I think it's going to be San Francisco and the Rams going down to the wire, guys, in that division.
After 4 weeks of the comp then, Dick, is there anyone that surprised you and is there anyone that's disappointed you?
I think Atlanta is a pleasant surprise at 2-2. They were very impressive last week when they came to Seattle and beat the Seahawks. I wouldn't project them to be a playoff team, but they are at least in that mix. You know, there are probably only four or five locks to make the playoffs in the NFC, or you know, all pretty much locks. I mean, Philadelphia is a lock. The winner of the NFC North is a lock, either the Vikings or the Packers. Tampa Bay is a lock. And then one of those two teams in the West is a lock. There's four. But then you've got like five or six other teams. You've got the Cowboys. The Giants have been, I'm still not sold on them, but they have been very impressive in going 3-1 in their first four games. The Bears at 2-2, the Seahawks, the Cardinals, the Falcons all at 2-2. I mean, those teams, by just staying at 500, that's all you have to do now in the NFL with the seven playoff berths per conference. All you have to do is stay 500 through the first 16 weeks of the season and then get a win in week 17, go 9-8. And 9-8 is almost assuredly going to get you into the playoffs now with 17 weeks instead of, see, 8-8 was not a good enough record with 16 games. 9-8 should be good enough, especially with the parity in this conference, to get into the playoffs.
What about when Dallas lost in week one to the Buccaneers and Prescott went down? This new quarterback that's replaced him, Cooper Rush, is he someone that's going to end up being a big deal, or is he just come into this system and it's worked and he's fitted in well with it?
I think the latter. I think he's done an excellent job coming in and just not making mistakes. I mean, he doesn't have any interceptions on the season. He's got four touchdowns. He's only throwing for 184 yards a game. So he's just managing the game very, very well and letting a very good, I would say surprisingly good, Dallas Cowboy defense win the football games. Now, I do not like Dallas's chances this week. I mean, you take a look, Dallas coming on a three-game winning streak. Meanwhile, the Rams just got embarrassed, and now the Cowboys got to go west to take on the Rams. I like Los Angeles in that game. It's one of my best picks of the week.
We'll get to those. Question on the text line here. In the wake of the Mahomes v. Brady battle where Kansas City went to Tampa and beat the Bucs 41-31. Hi, Dick. Is Tampa Bay in trouble? They've come up against two good teams in the Packers and Kansas City, lost them both. Are they and Tom Brady done? Asks Jono from Mudgee.
If the NFC weren't so mediocre, I would say Tampa Bay is done. I mean, if the NFC had two or three legitimate teams that just, let's say if they had two or three more teams that have looked like the Eagles have looked thus far, I would say Tampa Bay's done. But right now, I don't know who the second best team in the NFC is. Now, I'm still wondering if the Eagles are the best team. We know that the Eagles have been the best team for the first 4 weeks. There's no question about that. There, I mean, the Eagles by a large margin have been the best team in the NFC in the first 4 weeks of the season. Now, we don't know if that's going to continue or not. What we do know is the Eagles' schedule is pretty easy the rest of the way. In fact, I heard it was the easiest in the NFL the rest of the way. So for the Eagles to get to, you know, 12-5, that is not going to be that's not going to be a stretch. I've got no idea who the second best team is. I mean, I picked the Packers as my Super Bowl team. I still think they has got as good a chance as any to be that second place team. But Tampa Bay is in a small group of teams along with Minnesota, Green Bay, the 49ers, the Rams. I'm not going to throw the Cowboys in there yet. I'm not a believer yet in them. But, you know, there's four or five teams that you just kind of throw Tampa into. And because there's no clear-cut first tier, Tampa's not done yet.
Also here on, as we talk about the AFC West, the Chargers morning team. Can you please ask Dick what he thinks of the LA Chargers' chances now that their left tackle, Rashawn Slater, is out for the season and Justin Herbert is carrying an injury? Lincoln at Wollongong sending that one through. Yeah, the Chargers. And what about their coach as well, Brandon Staley? Not sure if he really cuts the mustard, Dick.
Well, Brandon Staley kept him from the playoffs last year with very questionable fourth down calls where he decided not to take field goals and it cost them the playoffs. And, you know, the 2-2 start is frustrating for Charger fans, I know. You know, there's really only one excusable loss, or one inexcusable loss, rather, and that's the loss to the Jaguars. But, you know, Justin Herbert wasn't Justin Herbert in that game. He looked a lot better this week in the 34-24 win over the Texans. Their other loss is at Kansas City, where they only lost by three, and they actually outplayed Kansas City in that game. So I liked the Chargers at the beginning of the season to make the AFC Championship game against the Bills and lose to Buffalo. But, you know, the injuries are really racking up. I mean, you mentioned Slater and Bosa and now the cracked ribs for Herbert. How long until he's 100%? So, I mean, what the Chargers need to do is they just, you know, kind of tread water, see if they can finish second place in that division, you know, be able to be a really tough out as a wild card team. I think Kansas City is going to win that division with the Chargers finishing second due to those injuries. But it's not out of the realm of possibility that Chargers get healthy early and can pass Kansas City. They get their last game against Kansas City at home. But I still think the Chargers are a double-digit win team, a playoff team, and a team I'm not going to want to face at all in the playoffs in January if they can get everybody back. Of course, Slater's not coming back because he's done for the year.
What do you make of the Ravens, Dick? Because, you know, they've had chances to win a couple of other games, yet they've had big second half collapses. Where are they at?
I love them. I love the Ravens, guys. I mean, they are the best 2-2 team in football. I love them this week. They, as you mentioned, they've got to finish games, and they just haven't finished games. If they would have just, I mean, it was a 99% win probability for the Ravens against the Miami Dolphins.
and they lost. It was a well over 90% win probability against Buffalo, leading by 10 points in the fourth quarter, and they lost. So if the Ravens just hold on to the wins that they should have already had, what would be the narrative on the Ravens? The narrative on the Ravens would be, oh my gosh, they're the best team in the AFC. They're even better than Kansas City. But because they lost those two games, the narrative is, what's wrong with Baltimore? So I am all in on Baltimore. I think they're absolutely, with Kansas City, the two best teams, and Buffalo as well. I mean, there's just, you know, we're spending all this time talking about the NFC and how much mediocrity there is. There is a really good top shelf of AFC teams, those teams I just mentioned, and the Chargers probably just out of that group with the Ravens and with the Bills and with the Chiefs. The AFC is just, I mean, the AFC playoffs is going to be absolutely fantastic.
I'll come back and get your best bets in the NFL, but just in the Major League at the moment, all eyes on Aaron Judge at the Yankees to see if he can get home run 62, which would be an American League record. He's not there yet. I see your Mariners confirmed in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, it was a good day for the Mariners on Friday night. They got a walk-off home run, went viral on social media. Everybody went crazy. I mean, it was kind of a meaningless home run because we already knew they were going to win the playoffs anyway, but to hit a home run to win a game and clinch the playoffs in front of a packed house, that was really, really cool. It has been 21 years, guys, since my Mariners made the playoffs. So that was fun. As far as Aaron Judge goes, boy, he has been stuck for a long time. He finally got 61, but now he's been stuck trying to get 62 for a long time now, and the pressure is mounting. And it's not just the pressure to get 62, but it's also the pressure to win the Triple Crown. And the Triple Crown has only happened twice in the last 60 years. And the Triple Crown is you lead the league in home runs, runs batted in, and batting average. Right now, he's first in home runs. He's first in runs batted in. He's second barely by 4 percentage points out of first place in that. So he needs to get going, not just hit his 62nd home run, but he needs to finish with, you know, four or five more hits in the last three games, just to get that batting average up over 315 so he can get the Triple Crown.
We know it's the NBA preseason, Dick, but was there much talk about the Phoenix Suns losing to the Adelaide 36ers?
You know, I saw it. I mean, it was enough that I saw it on the social media. So, yes, Phoenix was getting clowned by social media that they lost. And it wasn't even a Division I team, right? Kind of a Division II team in Australia, is that right?
Oh, they missed the playoffs last season.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I did not see the box score, so I don't know if Devin Booker played. I don't know if Chris Paul played. I would imagine, since I went to an exhibition game with the Clippers the other day who played an international team, they played nobody. I mean, their top player was about the eighth player off the bench. So if that was the team that Phoenix rolled out there, then I guess it's fine. But if they played with any of their starters, that's pretty embarrassing.
Well, we note Ben Simmons played a game of basketball yesterday.
Yeah,
actually played.
And, you know, a typical Ben Simmons line. You know, what was it, like 6 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, and, you know, just a handful of minutes? I mean, that's what Ben Simmons going to do. I'm wishing Ben Simmons well. I mean, I think obviously he handled this whole thing tremendously poorly. You know, the court of public, he failed in the court of public opinion. There's no question about that. He could have handled a lot better. But having said that, I do think with Kyrie on one side, Kevin Durant on the other side, like Steve Nash said last week, I don't care if Ben Simmons makes one shot. He says, he can help us other ways. He can distribute the basketball to the two superstar scorers, and he can play really good defense, and he can run the floor. So I'm wishing him well. I think Brooklyn is a very viable threat in the Eastern Conference. I wouldn't put him at the top ahead of Boston or probably Milwaukee, but I think they're right there. And the NBA season is going to be a lot of fun.
Did you get a chance to see our rugby league grand final, Dick?
I did not. What happened?
The Emperor's team got smashed.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Parramatta
Poor
went
Parramatta.
Down. Yeah. Penrith won, but they were too good. They were too good. 28-12. They go back-to-back, and it's their third grand final in a row, Penrith.
Wow.
Yeah. So they've built a bit of a dynasty.
So you got a dynasty there, something we have not seen in the NFL. We just keep churning out new champions every year in the NFL.
Yeah. And on that, a lot of our listeners following your best bets. So what have you got for us?
Boy, there's a lot of games I like this week, but I think my number one, I'll stick with my number one, and we alluded to it, the Baltimore Ravens should be more than 3-point favorites at home against the Bengals. You know, think about it for a second. Baltimore, 2-2. They're a much better team than 2-2. They're coming home. They're facing a team in the Bengals that accomplished what they wanted to accomplish last year. Their goal was to make the Super Bowl last year, and here's a division rival and an upstart division rival taking the mantle from the great Baltimore Ravens and going all the way to the Super Bowl. This is their first matchup against Cincinnati since that Super Bowl. I think they're going to be hungry. I think they're going to be angry. And I think they win by at least a touchdown. So give me the Ravens -3.
Okay, Ravens -3 versus Cincinnati. Dick, thank you so much.
All right, boys. Talk to you next week.
Champions League this morning. Liverpool lead Rangers 1-0 at Anfield. Napoli has a 2-1 lead over Ajax in the Netherlands. Club Brugge at home leads Atletico Madrid 1-0. Porto and Bayer Leverkusen is scoreless. Inter Milan and Barcelona also scoreless. Frankfurt and Tottenham scoreless. Now, all those games are around 40 minutes in. There's two games completed, and Bayern Munich have beaten their Czech opponents 5-0, and Marseille beat Sporting Lisbon 4-1 in the Champions League this morning. This text, what about WA's Teague Wiley, youngest batsman since Ricky Ponting to make a first-class Shield century? Another star in the making, says Steve, and yes, this is in the Sheffield Shield, the first match of the season between New South Wales and WA in Perth, and after being sent in, the Blues were rolled for 180. In response, WA 258 all out of 105 overs, so slow going, but leading by 78 runs on the first dig. And amidst that slow going, an 18-year-old, Teague Wiley, outstanding. A first-class ton, 18 years of age, first teenager, as Steve points out, since Ricky Ponting, to score a Sheffield Shield ton. And you're going back to 1992-3 when Punter did that. I think he did it twice as a teenager, actually, Ricky Ponting. But here's a name to watch, Loz. Teague Wiley, 18 years of age.
Geez, there's some good young blokes coming through at the moment, isn't it? And he's only played, I think that was his third first-class match. So he showed plenty of maturity out there on a wicket that wasn't easy to bat on. Just looking through some of the names in this Western Australian side. I don't know too many of them. I'm looking through some of their stats. What about, where is it? This guy here. He scored 38, where is he? 32 runs of 161 balls.
that's digging in.
That is what you call digging in. But it was a bowler-friendly wicket. So Sam Fenning is his name.
Coming in at number 3.
He stayed out there and just tried to nullify the New South Wales attack. But he must have plenty of patience when he's batting middo. Because 32 runs of 161 balls. That's a strike rate of 19.
Well, look at these figures. Look at Chris Tremaine's figures. 24 overs, 13 maidens, 2 for 25. Ben Dwarsh's 20 overs, 6 maidens, 4 for 48. But yeah, Tremaine, 24 overs, conceding 25 runs off 13 maidens. So yeah, that pitch must be doing a little bit. But also Cowboy from Hill texting, good to see an opener make a name for himself early in the Shield season thus far. Reckon it's the summer to blood a couple of openers and start phasing Warner out before the Ashes next winter, says Cowboy from Hill. I wouldn't be doing that yet.
Well, the big one's Will Pekoski. What's he doing?
Well, he's been back playing. I know he
scored some runs. I know he scored some
second
runs
11 cricket,
about a fortnight ago. He made a big score. I know he made over 100. So he is a guy that would spend, you know, time at the crease. He looks as though he is suited to test match cricket. He's a guy that made a big impact a couple of years ago, but unfortunately has suffered some head injury. In terms of concussion, and he suffered a number of concussions already early in his career. But if he can get on the pitch and stay there for an extended period without suffering another concussion, you just get the feeling that he'll be one of these openers that will represent Australia for a long time to come.
No doubt. He's he's talented. He's got that in him, doesn't he? The 10, 15-year career player, provided he can...
Yeah, it looks like so he's got the temperament to be out there and handle everything that's thrown at him. But unfortunately, with the amount of head injuries that he's suffered in cricket, whether it's been fielding or whether it's been batting, that's the other thing. It's happened when both disciplines have been on display. So fingers crossed that he can get through the season unscathed. And if he does do that, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's playing Test match cricket for Australia this year.
Tonight, Loz mentioned earlier, Australia and the West Indies. So a 2020 international on the Gold Coast, leading into, of course, the 2020 World Cup starting in a couple of weeks' time. Yesterday, Aaron Finch spoke. He said he doesn't think Cameron Green can force his way into that 2020 World Cup squad, despite Marcus Stoinis and Mitch Marsh still on the comeback from injury. Now, Mitch Marsh is playing tonight, but he returns as a batter only, so won't be bowling. Finch also saying yesterday he has no regrets over retiring from one-day internationals and hopes it'll allow him to play 2020 cricket for longer. The market for that match, by the way, with TAB, Australia $1.23, the West Indies $4.20. But it's going to be all eyes on Aaron Finch to see, well, not only his form leading into the World Cup, but whether he does give it away as far as internationals are concerned at the end of the 2020 World Cup.
Oh, wouldn't surprise me if he gives it away and just goes on the circuit. Plays around the world, but it's a big couple of games for Aaron Finch because he needs to get some runs to get a bit of confidence going into that World Cup. Because if he doesn't score against the West Indies in his first couple of games in the World Cup, he doesn't score runs. What are you doing with him? You got to persevere with him.
Well, they're going to have to. It's the captain.
Yeah, well, it might be a mistake because you've given him an extended run already, haven't you? You know, you've given him an extended run to try and find some form. I know that Clarkey's got a massive rap on him as a captain in this form of the game, but your main job is still to get runs as an opener. And they've got plenty of depth, the Australian side. And, you know, perhaps they might, you know, make a change, but highly unlikely, given he's the captain.
By the way, Pup is crook today. If you're just tuning in, he'll be hopefully back tomorrow. But also, Tim Payne set to make his first-class return for Tassie against Queensland in the Sheffield Shield tomorrow. Now, you last played a first-class match 18 months ago. The former Australian captain, 37 years of age, will also be releasing his autobiography later this month, which I'm sure will be keenly read from particularly cricket journalists, and I'm sure we'll see excerpts of that sooner rather than later. But interesting considering, I guess, his fall from the Australian team. The fact that there was an investigation done and he was cleared for explicit text messages sent to an employee at Cricket Tasmania some years ago. And that was investigated. And then, well, it was
that
nothing
was
to see
poorly.
Here.
That was
and,
handled poorly.
Well, it was just because it came out in the media in the lead up to the Ashes last year that he was turfed.
Well, I'm glad he's back playing. He's gone through a tough period. Again, I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but there was an investigation done. He was cleared. He was okay, given the green light to come back and play cricket. And then things were made public and Cricket Australia obviously thought long and hard about what they were going to do and put the pressure on Payne to stand out. And he has done that and he's tried to sort of quietly go about his business again. He is 37 years of age. Most people thought that he would just wander off into the sunset and you might not have heard of Tim Payne again, but I'm glad he's come back playing for Tasmania and I hope he has a wonderful year.
By the way, Canterbury today, the track as it stands, a heavy 9. The penetrometer is 6.12. The rail's out 8 metres. Overcast conditions, of course. There's been 9 mils of rain there in the last 24 hours and 40 mil in the last 7 days for that meeting at Canterbury Park today. And we'll get a tip or two off Adam Pengilly and Brad Davidson throughout the morning. Pengilly's not far away. Just also on the text line here, Morning Legends, Dane from Newey here. First time texting in and an everyday listener. Good on you, Dane. just wanted to say how good these Knights women are here in Newcastle. We had a reception for them yesterday at the Town Hall where our mayor gave them the keys to the city. Great turnout to get autographs and sing the song. I hope it sparks up those men to do something similar after what they witnessed footy means to the town. And yes, the Knights NRLW side coming off their grand final triumph against Parramatta on Sunday. And as far as the World Cup is concerned, news yesterday that Millie Boyle and Tamika Upton have withdrawn. Now, Upton has a calf injury, whilst Boyle is prioritising work. She works with people who have disabilities as well, Millie Boyle. And Brad Donald, the Gillaroos coach, pointed to the, I guess, the semi-professional nature of the women's game, as you're just going to see this more and more, that they won't be able to commit to tournaments like this due to work commitments. Now, Emma Tonegato and Shaylee Bent of the Dragons have been called up to replace those sides. But I think we've had a few texts from people in the Hunter certainly cheering for their women's side after what the men dished up this year.
Yeah, and that's a shame for Millie, isn't it? I mean, she's had to choose her job over representing a country, and I'm sure she's comfortable with that decision, but she's a real superstar of the game, Millie Boyle, and her and a couple of the other girls that went up there this season to play with Newcastle have turned them into a premiership-winning side. It was great to see them play on Grand Final Day, the NRL Grand Final Day, get to experience what it was like playing in front of a massive crowd. Women's football in this country, the numbers are growing every day, every season. And they are starting to be recognised when they walk down the street. And it's getting to the stage where, you know, they'll start to earn more money than they've ever earned before. Still a long way to go, obviously. But it's, yeah, it's a bit of a, you know, a shame that she can't, you know, get that time off and have the opportunity to go away and represent Australia and play overseas in a World Cup.
By the way, on our Immortals chat just earlier, Loz, morning boys, I'm not a Para supporter, but I think Ray Price was the best forward I've seen in my time of watching rugby league and would be worthy at, of course, this just refreshes on me, worthy of being at least considered for Immortals status, says Gazza from Lumia.
Oh, what a legend. Oh, what a legend. I mean, that Parramatta team had so many wonderful players, didn't they? Mick Cronin was another one. You know, he was a colossus out there in the centres for the Parramatta side. Brett Kenny, Peter Sterling, the great Sterlo, what a wonderful player he was. Turvey Mortimer. Yeah. There's a lot that you could rattle off that are always in the discussion but aren't immortals. Mm. And again, we get back to how many do you want with that status? You know, because there's a few that have come through the last 10 years that would hold their own in any company. Mm. And we rattled them off earlier, you know, the likes of your Thurstons, your Slaters, your Smiths, your Lockyers, all those type of players, you know. Brad Fittler's, you know, there's plenty there.
And just on the Immortals chat, I like this text. I'm not peeing in your pocket, Loz, but you and Freddie deserve strong consideration. Absolute champions. No names of that one, but here also Steve Rogers from the Sharks.
Oh, what a player, Steve Rogers. The Prince of Centres. You wouldn't remember
before my
Steve
time,
Rogers,
Loz.
Yeah. Oh, mate. He was just the best. He could play a number of positions. Later in his career, he played, you know, as a 5'8 and a lock. And not only could he accelerate and get through a gap and do some wonderful things with the ball, defensively, he was one of the best players you've ever seen. Mm. For an outside back, just could tackle as well as anyone in the game.
Coming up after the 7 o'clock news, we got an interview with Eddie Hearn, of course, from Matchroom Boxing. Gee, some of the fighters on his list that he promotes, the great Canelo, Alvarez, Gennady Golovkin amongst them as well. And well, we'll speak to Eddie Hearn because they're doing, Matchroom's doing their first Australian event coming up on Saturday week in Brisbane, in fact. So, well, we'll speak to Eddie Hearn after 7 o'clock. We've got Adam Pengilly right now, though. Morning, Adam.
Morning, Jared. Morning, Loz.
News yesterday that Giga Kick into the Everest to run for James Harren.
Yeah, big call, isn't it, from James Harren, isn't it, Jared, to bring him into the race. But he had to think a little bit outside the box, given the fact we're pretty skinny in terms of depth for this year's race. So I actually don't mind the play. Horse that's 4 from 4 so far in his career for Clayton Douglas. He was great winning the Danehill Stakes last start. So this is a massive, massive leaping grade, obviously. I don't think the likes of Nature Strip and Eduardo and Boston Running, but he brings some X factor to the race. So well done to Clayton Douglas as well. A huge thrill for him to have a runner in the Everest. He's got a small team of horses down there in Victoria, and he's got a chance to run one in the Premier Sprint in Australia.
What's happened over there in France, Adam, with a couple of the jockeys?
Yeah, did you see this was on the weekend?
I saw the one with the elbow.
Wow.
Yeah, what an amazing story. Oh. Christophe Soumillon, in a race at St. Claude on Friday, deliberately elbowed one of his rival riders who fell from his horse, and a little bit of damage done there as well. He was given a 60-day or two-month suspension, so he'll be out of the saddle for a couple of months, but the repercussions are now starting to really flow. The Aga Khan's taken away the retainer that Christophe Soumillon had with the Aga Khan, so he's losing his retainer there and a bit of backing. So the fallout's going to be quite significant. It was just bizarre. I saw the replay of it, and it was absolutely deliberate. Like, he's literally leaned over and elbowed another guy out of the saddle, and he's hit the deck. And I don't know what you guys think, whether 2 months is enough or not.
No way. Not for that.
Yeah, yeah. He's got off light, hasn't he, Jerry?
Unbelievable. You can't do that.
No, I've seen pretty much equivalent suspensions handed out for much less transgressions. And for him to get away with only 2 months, he's a very, very lucky boy.
To say the least. Now, big day at Caulfield. We've got a Cox Plate preview, I guess, with the Might and Power Stakes, the old Caulfield Stakes. And I saw the Guineas draw was done yesterday as well.
Yeah, can't wait for this Might and Power Stakes, Jared. This is a dead set Cox Plate entree, isn't it? With Animo up against the likes of Zaki, Alligator Blood, and I'm Thunderstruck, and they'll all progress to the Cox Plate in a couple of weeks' time, all being equal. And noted the comments from Mick Price with a lot of interest yesterday. He said that I'm Thunderstruck has to be closer to the action there on the weekend. Doesn't want him sort of just flopping out of the gates and sitting in the second half of the field. He wants to get up there nice and close to Alligator Blood and really make it a true test over 2,000 metres. So Animo's dominating the market at the moment. Obviously, he's come through, had a few issues after his last start, Group 1 win. He seems to be all okay, but this is going to be a cracking race at Caulfield on the weekend.
What about Saturday's racing, mate? I know we've got some rain coming. Will we race?
Yeah, I think we'll be okay, Loz. There's a lot of rain coming, isn't there? And that Randwick track has copped an absolute beating, hasn't it, the last couple of weeks for the Silver Eagle meeting. And I was thinking about it more after I chatted to you guys yesterday. I think it probably does make sense to try and have this meeting at Rose Hill in the future. I know they'll probably try and get some renovations done to Rose Hill in this sort of 3 or 4 week period when it's out of action and the majority of the racing's at Randwick. But given we have the Golden Eagle at Rose Hill, like, would it make sense to have the Silver Eagle there as well?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, yeah. It should be a good meeting. Looking forward to it. I'm watching on Weather Watch, obviously. We're going to be on a... Oh, it's going to be a bottom.
Jeez, I think it's just going to be a heavy 10. It looks like it with the amount of rain that's coming.
It'll be a 12 on the weekend. It's going to be tough, tough going. So let's hope the track can get through on the weekend and it can recover somewhat for the Everest on the following week. But regardless, I'm going to be working on a very rain-affected track for Everest Day in about 8 or 9 days' time as well.
Thank you, Adam. Have a good day. Look after yourself, by the way.
Sorry, boys.
All good.
I'm trying to get there. Maybe I might be sick at home. Clarky's going down. I'm struggling a bit, so it must be that time of year.
You and Clarky are hanging out. West Cricket Club.
Yeah, maybe.
Look after yourself, mate. We'll chat. Boys.